Kia ora and welcome back to System Fix, podcast from the health media. My name is Barbara Fountain and I am editor of New Zealand Doctor Rata Aotearoa. Each episode of System Fix, we take a look at progress with the reforms proposed for the New Zealand health system. These arose from the report of the Health and Disability System Review Panel, aka the Simpson Report. However, they have been significantly revved up by Health Minister Andrew Little to become what I like to call the Big Little Revolution. On System Fix, I speak with regular panellists and invited guests about the changes, the highs, the lows, what's happened to date, and what we might expect. Thanks for joining me. Kia ora koutou, and welcome to this episode of System Fix, in which we catch up on health sector reform action and what this year's budget held for those reforms. In our last episode, we discussed the big reveal, Health Minister Andrew Little's announcement of the changes to the health sector. The proposals included creation of a new central agency called Health NZ, and a network of localities to run primary and community care, and a new Māori health authority with extensive commissioning powers and influence throughout the system. The latter caught the attention of opposition political parties, suggesting the authority would drive a wedge in the public health system, creating a separatist system, a suggestion roundly rejected by Mr. Little. The budget on 20th of May delivered $24 billion for Vote Health. That was $4.7 billion more than was budgeted for last year, though it is likely to be only $500 million up on what was actually spent in the last budget year. And that is about the sum which has been allocated over 4 years for initial implementation of the health changes. Working out exact budget figures is a fine art, left in my mind to the folk in Treasury. But I think I can safely say around $98 million has been allocated to the creation of the Māori Health Authority, $158 million to creation of Health NZ, $46 million to prototyping locality networks, and $127 million for commissioning kaupapa Māori services, and $18 million operating funding to establish iwi Māori partnership boards, all over 4 years. Aside from the budget, the biggest reform development was the announcement of Sir Mason Drury to form a steering group to work on the appointment of an interim board for the Māori Health Authority. The steering group of six was subsequently announced. They are Matiri Harwood, a Papakura GP and University of Auckland Associate Professor, Tā Mark Solomon, Chair of the South Island Whānau Ora Commissioning Agency, Rahui Papa, Waikato Reo and Tikanga Expert,
Lisa Tamahi, Chair of Te Ranga o Naitahu,
Kim Nari Umu, Chair of Tairawhiti DHB, E Mohiri Hokama, General Manager of Rongo Whakahata Iwi Trust, Pari Kafia McLean, Chief Executive of Te Kahui Tatari Turi, the Criminal Cases Review Commission. Their job is to provide a final list of recommended appointments in early July, with membership of the Interim Māori Health Authority Board to be confirmed on the 1st of September. The steering group will also be providing advice and oversight to the appointment of all candidates to the Interim Health NZ Board, for which nominations are also being sought. And that is pretty much where we are today, the last day of May. With me today are System Fix's regular panellists, independent health researcher Gabrielle Baker and University of Auckland health policy researcher Tim Tembensel. Welcome back.
Kia ora.
Have I missed out anything in that whistle-stop summary?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think that'll do for a start.
The headlines for certain.
Gabrielle, before we take a look at the budget, what sort of feedback have you been hearing about the appointments to the steering group?
Well, firstly, most of what I hear is really positive about the individuals that have been named. So you've got people like Patakafia has quite substantial background in government policy. And so you've got people like her on there, Matiri, with her extensive health knowledge, both as a GP and kind of from an academic point of view. So positive about the individuals. But I think with it comes, I guess, some concerns that this still looks like a fairly conventional approach to how you would go about stuff. And the kind of comments that I've seen on Twitter, for example, have picked up that this is not the visionary change people were hoping for. So I saw someone commented, I was one of the people commenting on this, but where are the Māori with lived experience of disability on this group? You have to draw a line of about a fixed number of people on a steering group, and you are going to leave people out, but it is always the same people that get left out. And the other thing is, when I look at it, I've read everything I can get my hands on about any attempt at a Māori health authority, in the past, and there's almost always a steering group. And so I was kind of hoping that there'd be, I don't know, something a little bit more different.
It's interesting. It's a challenge, isn't it, to move ourselves away from ways of doing things. Have you heard of anyone put their hands up for the Health NZ board positions?
No, I haven't, but you know, that only came out a couple of days ago, didn't it? I probably wouldn't anyway. Fear of them, that is.
I mean, I've definitely heard lots of Māori talk about the nomination process. And I think that this is relatively similar in concept to the response to the steering group. You know, people wanting to nominate people, put people forward, or, you know, shoulder tapping people and saying, I think you should put your name forward. So a mixture of that and people saying, well, is this the right approach overall anyway?
I kind of got the feeling in something I've read in the last few days with regard to the steering group, where they do have some flexibility around how they actually go forward with the process of appointing or selecting or calling for nominations for the actual board. So maybe that's where you'll see some of that departure from the norm come in.
It could be. Well, I don't know if you've read the material that's on the website. So you can, at the moment, you can nominate yourself. There's a web link. And on that, the description of the Māori Health Authority kind of acknowledges that all the decisions haven't been made. And to me, that's a really positive thing, because all of the decisions can't possibly have been made. Otherwise, it is absolutely going to be just like every other attempt. So I thought that was positive. I still think that they're positioning it as a fairly conventional government entity of some kind, even if they haven't quite decided what that is. So it was good, but I still think you've cut off some of your options.
So going back to the budget, personally, I look at budget papers and feel like I'm back in calculus. Every figure seems to hide a bit of a trick, and trying to get the figures in the budget papers to actually reconcile with the figures in the budget media statements is a complete nightmare. Tim, is part of your health research policy work actually poring over budget papers past?
No, not until I got mixed up with you lot, probably. But it is now. So, yes, but it was probably something that was worth doing in the past. And I've found it really interesting, if frustrating. But there's a very interesting story this year, I think. And, I mean, the headline, as you say, is the $24.4 billion for health in this year's budget, which I think my figures, that's $1.2 billion up on last year. So that's about 5% increase. But as you mentioned, Barbara, the real fascinating one, and I can't get to the bottom of this, but one presumes it's COVID related. What was spent last year was $3 billion more than what was budgeted last year. So last year in the budget was tick under $20 billion allocated government spending on health. In these figures, we've got a base of $23 billion was spent. So that's a 15% difference. That's enormous. Now, one has to presume that COVID is a big part of it. But if you actually look at the sort of the allocations for COVID specifically and what comes from Chris Hipkins as COVID minister's sort of area, it's about $600 to $800 million last year and this year. So it's not the whole lot by any means. I presume there's that extra payment for primary care services, the couple of one-off things that were done last year as part of it. But I don't know how, you know, there was less demand in hospitals, you know, so what makes up that $3 billion? That's huge. So that's my first thing. But the big story is that health spending has increased enormously in the last 2 years.
Yeah, it is pretty huge. And it's funny because in my mind, if someone says to me, oh, what's vote health? My first thought is $14 billion. And that must be some years ago when I first started writing about it. Yeah, it's nowhere near there. And when I just look back at those figures that I mentioned earlier on about the amount of money that's been put towards the creation of the Māori Health Authority, $98 million, $158 million to the creation of Health NZ, I actually don't have any historic figures with regard to how much it costs to set up new agencies. Is that something either of you would have any kind of feel for? And
I don't, but that's an excellent question. I'm just Googling it now.
No, I can't say I do. And compared to, you know, I mean, the last time was 20 years ago, and I guess the numbers are going to look very different just because of inflation and everything else. But yeah, $500 million spread over 4 years. So if you think of it as, what, $125 million out of $2.4 billion? What's that? Yeah, I mean, that's about 5%, isn't it? 0.5%. Just get the decimal point right. It's 0.5%. That sounds better.
Yeah. I was really interested in the $46 million that's going towards prototyping locality networks over 4 years, which kind of made me think, oh, they've got 4 years of prototyping. Does that make me feel like it's going to be a bit longer before we have these localities really established? I spoke to someone recently who said, oh, that's actually really good news because at least we know they're going to try and do it properly. but 4 years does seem like quite a long time. Can we assume that some localities will be up and running before they finish spending that money?
I mean, my guess would be you couldn't spend it all at once. If you threw that in the first year, it wouldn't be money well spent because these things do take time. I don't think there's anything there that says that there wouldn't be other support to follow in future budgets. But yeah, I don't read too much into that.
Gabrielle, the $18 million operating funding to establish iwi Māori partnership boards. Now, you have actually written for us on the iwi Māori partnership boards. And to me, they have such a critical role. And I feel whenever I read anything to do with the health reforms, I mean, we've got the Māori Health Authority kind of as a national body, but we've got high, high expectations of what iwi Māori partnership boards, the role they will play. And so the $18 million obviously will be well spent. Is it enough?
Well, I would say it's certainly not enough, but where that comes from for me is that the reforms seem to hinge locally on Māori partnership being through these Māori partnership boards or Māori iwi relationship boards. And they talk about kind of taking the ones that there are already 20 there and just kind of souping them up. But these 20 have been, in various ways, in some cases, more or less ignored by their district health board. So not all of them are starting from a position of having had influence or having been able to contribute in the way that the future envisages. Mm. So they're going to need quite a lot of support. I put this in the bit that I wrote for you, that I'd be really worried if a central agency was deciding what they needed and was deciding what we need to do is have Institute of Directors training or some kind of blanket thing without really understanding how can these iwi partnership boards fulfill the role of partner in the system and what extra is needed for that. And I don't think that they know that it's $18 million. I'm pretty much certain it's not. But I think it's a goodwill gesture at this point. That's how I interpret it.
Because, of course, health isn't the only area that's going to be seeking increased input from iwi.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the iwi partnership boards have the potential to be really phenomenal. So I'd love to see them properly invested in and properly supported.
The other funding, which when I went back and looked again, I was trying to work out exactly what it was meaning, but that $127 million in various places it was put towards localities, but then it's actually for commissioning kaupapa Māori services. And I think it's initial commissioning funding for the Māori Health Authority, although in the budget it was listed against localities, and that really confused me. That $127 million, that's going to be over 4 years. Tim, how does that sound like to you as an initial funding pool for those services?
Well, I just went back to the interim Simpson report, Health and Disability Review, and there's a very interesting table there on. People can look for themselves. I'll say it's on page 118. And Gabrielle's probably seen this one, I think. But there's, in terms of the, in 2017-18, that financial year, there was $50 million spent through Māori health providers. So if it's going to come out as about $50 million a year, it's not going to be any more than what was in terms of providers 3 or 4 years ago. I know, you know, there might be issues and, you know, are we comparing apples with apples, but they're, you know, at least, you know, two different types of apples, I think.
I'm very impressed, Tim, that you zip back and find those figures so quickly. The other big figure that I was interested in was the extra money going to DHBs to fund cost and volume pressures over the next 4 years. And that was $2.7 billion. And that kind of also raised the question for me is people are talking about DHB deficits and whether they will get written off. What actually happens, Tim, once DHBs themselves cease to exist and become part of Health NZ? This money to fund cost and volume pressures is presumably going to go to Health NZ.
Yep.
And then how do you actually write off a debt?
I don't think it's that difficult. I mean, I don't know how it works in terms of internal accounting in your own budgets. If you didn't budget enough power and you've got a deficit in your electricity budget, well, you're paying the bills anyway and just means you budgeted wrongly. I mean, that's a bit facetious in terms of, you know, sort of what people in Treasury and elsewhere will be saying about DHB's so-called inability to manage debt. I think it's really important to take the long-term view. Per capita funding for healthcare paid for by government absolutely flatlined over 8 years. Okay. So when you, just looking at some OECD papers, and I was saying the thing that you expect over, you know, since 2000 and projecting to 2030 is you would expect, and they've done this for every country, so for New Zealand, this is true, 3% increases per capita in health spending, basically to stay still. So when you had zero, or between 0.5% for 8 years. That's why we have DHB deficits. There may be some things that boards have missed or done not as well as they could have, but board competence is not the reason we have DHB deficits.
Okay. So with the budget, obviously, it wasn't just vote health that actually impacts on the health and well-being of a population. There was money in social development and in housing. You guys have any comments on spending in those other areas?
The comment I have about things like the benefit increases, the commitment to increasing benefits is really positive, and the commitment to implementing the welfare advisory group recommendations is positive too, but it's always so incremental. Like, we can put a big chunk into writing off debt, just use that as example because we're just talking about it, but benefit increases have to be incremental, and when I've got a social justice hat on, I can't see why.
Not sure what the scale of it is in terms of actual billions. I'm thinking it's worth checking. Let's have a look and just see whether it's of the same degree or whether it's a lot smaller. Those sorts of increases, while they don't make up a lot of lost ground, may turn out to be quite significant figures in terms of the budget as a whole.
Sorry, I'll just find it.
While you're doing that, Barbara, it's interesting how we think of incremental, and that's a tough question. I mean, with health and with hospitals, I guess 15% isn't incremental. That's big.
So it says we've got benefits to increase by between $32 to $55 per week and student living support up $25 per week, totaling $3.3 billion over 4 years.
So it's actually similar in terms of a dollar amount to what they're wiping the DHB deficits.
Well, that's an interesting little discovery.
It's not to say it's enough.
Any other thoughts about the budget?
You could look at how it's distributed across the health sector. And that's where you run into what you were talking about earlier. It's so hard. I mean, you know, there is that roughly 50 mil per year for what I decoded as sort of the very low cost access type funding or for primary care. So what's that 50 mil? Well, that's about 4% of the total budget increase.
That's, for cost and volume pressures in primary care, $17.2 million over 4 years for primary maternity services. PharmAct gets an additional $200 million.
Over 4 years.
Yep, bringing its budget to more than $1.1 billion per year. Disability support services, $399 million over 4 years. That is an area that, as Gabrielle alludes to, is still very much up in the air. I mean, we still don't really know what's happening with disability at all with regard to the health reforms, and we don't find out. Is that September?
Yeah, September, apparently.
Oh, the money that was previously announced to run screening programs, more money for smoking cessation.
There was a little bit there. There was a tiny amount compared to all the others. There was something about support for NGOs. It was $3.4 million.
I missed that. I didn't pick that one.
Well, missed it because it's tiny. I guess that's an area, again, we don't know much about in terms of, you know, what's going to happen within the localities. Where will NGOs generally fit in all this? Because you could read into the reforms that there is a bigger place for them, but a lot of things would have to happen for them to get more secure funding, turn around what's happened over the last 10, 15 years.
So what do we see happening next? You know, we've got, as we mentioned, the September announcements coming up, but where are we now? May, end of May. So May, June, July, we've got those announcements from the steering group, Māori Health Authority, and presumably we'll also have similar announcements on the Health NZ board. We've got Martin Hefford and Stephen McKernan out and about in the sector talking to people about localities, presumably DHB staff starting to think about where they might be heading. We've got the pay freeze. It was another thing that's come in the last month, which has got quite a huge impact on the health sector as well. Anything else?
On Martin Hefford and Stephen McKernan going out and talking about localities, I noticed in the New Zealand Doctor story, they talked up Hokianga quite a bit. And I was just wondering, Gabrielle, have you got any leads in there about why they are promoting that and why they might sort of see as a model, not necessarily the model?
I hadn't seen that, so I can't really comment. But when people talk to me about the Hauora Hokianga example, and the other thing that they raise is the Ngāti Porou Hauora example, and both because of their roots as special medical areas. So when they talk about them, what I usually hear them saying that they like is a kind of a wraparound service, for want of a better word, something that to me fulfills the intention of the primary healthcare strategy and what was envisaged with PHOs. So the specific things people talk about are having prescriptions and the entity being able to take care of that for people, and also things like maternity care. So things that are not necessarily provided by a PHO now, but in those models have and can be.
It's interesting. The other thing with those two models is that they have a hospital at the core. And it's really interesting because I do think when you have a locality and there is a hospital involved, it's actually much easier for the local population to understand what their local health service is about.
Yeah, I mean, I should say that. So they both do have hospitals, but neither one of them would necessarily be hospitals as we imagine.
As we know it.
Yeah. They've got the brick and mortar part of being a hospital for certain. Yeah. And those buildings are and the sites are really significant within the community.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that much as we want to get away from bricks and mortar, there is a certain significance and a feeling of comfort of having a special place that is the core of your health service. But the other point about those two examples is, as you say, they have been special medical areas. And so they've had that history of a really strong community involvement with the health service and special attention, I suppose, from the point of view that they were funded slightly differently. Mm. Yeah, it is interesting, as you say, Tim, that they've been raised as examples. It would be quite nice to see some examples that might be maybe a bit more recent, like the healthcare home models. I mean, that's only a small part of what a locality will be about, but they do get occasionally raised as well.
Yeah, that could be a whole other conversation. I mean, related to some of the research we've been doing, we're headed up by Victoria University.
The Health Research Council has funded new models.
When we looked into this whole thing, you know, that was an important part of the research, you know, what have been the new models of care. And when we started sort of digging into that, the first thing that came up is what on earth is a model of care? And that's almost impossible to answer. People use that term in so many different ways. And they might just talk about a very small initiative. So, I mean, I would think you could talk about Hokianga as a model of care. But when asked that sort of question, that's not the sort of stuff that people talked about.
I feel a little bit like our lack of financial prowess is possibly constraining our ability to really deep dive into the budget.
I think the budget actually just is hard to deep dive into. So when the budget's announced, you get a speech and you get a bunch of media statements, and then you get these documents that are really hard to navigate because they're not made for you and me. They're not made for us to understand. They're made for some other purpose. So I know when I was thinking about this conversation we were going to have, and I opened the budget and I dutifully read through it, and I was like, no, I can't. It's so impenetrable. But what I did do though was have a look at media statements, and can't help but recall the times when I was working for government, and you know, you'd go to a budget lockup and then you come out and you'd see what ministers have been saying about stuff. And the year that everyone was sold success for Māori being a small amount of money, $2.5 million for Māori warden uniforms. And it's like, that was 2009, I think, or 2008. When I look at this, I think this is really, it's worlds away from that. And thank goodness, even if I can't understand every line in it.
Yeah, I suppose actually that's a message we should probably reiterate. Most of the feedback we've had on the budget, particularly with regard to the health reforms and the funding for the Māori Health Authority, has been very positive in terms of the time it's taken for us to go from the Kaupapa Inquiry Outcomes report to actually having money on the table to actually implement these changes. Okay, I'm just interested to hear what you would like to see in the next couple of months with regard to the rollout of the reforms.
For me, I'm going to harp on about the same thing I harp on about, but I want to see partnership, and I want to see the government signal a different way of working with Māori that will give a signal that this transformation is going to be meaningful and significant. So you'll notice, I didn't really comment on this before, but in the steering group, none of the stage one claimants are represented on that steering group, and I'm not sure why, but they're not. And I'd expect them to be playing a part in the future design as well, not just a small group of nominated people.
One of the points that they did make with the steering group was that none of the members of the steering group would be able to stand for the interim board. So possibly some of those people you might like to see there are going to show up at that next stage. Tim, what would you like to see in the next couple of months?
I'm a man of low expectations. I mean, I don't have anything strong on what I'd like to see in the next couple of months. I mean, it sort of be more like a 6 month time frame. But what is important is some flesh on the bones of what that relationship between the Ministry and Health New Zealand is going to look like, and what the relationship between Health New Zealand and the Māori Health Authority is going to look like. I'd like just to see where the thinking around localities is going, because there was something in that release on Friday about localities being up to 250,000 people. And I'm thinking, is 250,000 people really a locality? I was thinking they would be smaller than that, and I guess they can be, it's up to, but I'm beginning to think that if you're getting up to those sorts of numbers, it's going to be a different beast.
Yeah, that is true. I'm hoping that at least in the next month there'll be some more meaty news for us to discuss at our next panel discussion. And in the meantime, it's time for the System Fix Quiz. Now, I'm going to say it was really hard to come up with today's questions because I felt quite bad about quizzing you on the budget. My first question, how many pages was Vote Health?
Oh, let's just have a wild guess. Right.
As always.
37.
I'm going to go with like 4.
Vote Health was 150 pages long, folks.
Only going low because I thought that if I go much lower, then it would increase my chances of winning. Oh, my goodness.
I wouldn't like our listeners to think that you hadn't had a slight perusal, but anyway, I think you've been outed. I was actually really interested in trying to find a figure for how much money the New Zealand government is worth, I suppose, and I found the total net worth attributable to the Crown, because I thought we'd talk about Vote Health, which is, what, $24 billion, but how much is the Crown itself actually worth? So this is a figure I found in the budget. So what do you think the total net worth attributable to the Crown might be?
$100 billion.
I'm going to go more than that. I'm going to go 300.
Well, actually, Gabrielle is pretty much on the mark. $110 billion.
Well done.
Making up for my abysmal guess on Vote Health.
And the last question, and I'm sorry, I did struggle a little bit with these questions today. I found this very obscure term in the budget, OBEGAL, OBEGAL. Anybody know what that means?
OBEGAL. Is it an acronym?
Could be a hobbit, but it's an acronym.
Yeah, it could be a hobbit or a dwarf or an orc.
Okay, I'm going to let you off that one. Operating,
tell us.
Operating balance before gains and losses. So that represents the total Crown revenue less total Crown expenses, excluding minority interest share. OBEGAL can provide a more useful measure of underlying stewardship than the operating balance, as short-term market fluctuations are not included in the calculation. Now, I think that brings to an end a very challenging podcast about the budget and acknowledgement that none of us chose to work for Treasury.
I come from a family of accountants. Tried to get away from it.
Okay, well, thank you so much, guys. Kia ora, and we'll talk again soon.
Kia ora. Thank you, Barbara.
Kia ora.
Thanks for listening to System Fix, brought to you by the Health Media. If you want to learn more about changes to the health system and at the same time support independent quality journalism in New Zealand, please think about subscribing to one or more of our publications. While moving around the health system, the Roster Te Rārangi is a free fortnightly email newsletter. Subscribe at theroster.co.nz. And please share System Fix with your friends. They can subscribe wherever they usually find their podcasts. Nga mihi nui, catch you again soon.